The next case on the northern panel's agenda is Grills versus Sanchez, case number 60447. Mr. Brandt? There you go.
Yes.
Okay.
May it please the court, my name is Travis Brandt. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, Richard Grills. This is an appeal from the district court's granting of a motion for summary judgment against Mr. Grills and in favor of defendants Jeanette Sanchez and Clark County Pool and Lawn Service. The basis of the ruling by the lower court was that the lower court found that there was no written agreement between the parties and that there was no agreement at all between the parties. We believe the evidence shows that Mr. Grills had an agreement to transfer ownership of his business, serve as the trade qualifier for that business after his ownership was transferred, and then receive payments of $2,500 a month for the remainder of his life. There was also, according to Mr. Grills, an agreement that he would be paid back some of the money that he loaned to his former business. The original business was Backyard Pool Service. In the months prior to it changing names or being transferred over to Clark County Pool and Lawn Service, he invested money in the business. The evidence in favor of Mr. Grill's position is interrogatory answers where he gives the location where the agreement was made, Timbers Bar and Grill in Las Vegas, the date it was made, and the parties that were present. Also provided declarations from Anthony Grills, who was present at that March 24, 2004 meeting, and declarations from a Kenneth Wellington and a William Grills, who provided declarations stating that that Jeanette Sanchez acknowledged that an agreement existed with Mr. Grills during a July 20th, 2007 meeting. Now, according to Ms. Sanchez, she does acknowledge that some a discussion was had with Mr. Grills regarding the business, but that it never rose to a level of an agreement where she agreed to make payments of $2,500 a month. Attached to the motions that were filed in lower court were W-2s filed, which Clark County Pool and Lawn Service gave to Mr. Grills, indicating that he was an employee and not a contractor who was being bought out. Also, the checks that he received for approximately 6 years show that some payments and taxes were apparently taken out. I do want to point out that the first five checks that were issued to Mr. Grills in 2004 were for the full amount of the agreement of $2,500 and not for any reductions of taxes. Later on, taxes were taken out. It's our position that whether taxes were taken out by Clark County Pool and Lawn Service or whether at some later time he'd have to pay the taxes anyway. We also named as a defendant in the lower court was besides Jeanette Sanchez, was Clark County Pool and Lawn Service. At the time the agreement was made with Jeanette Sanchez, Clark County Pool and Lawn Service was not created yet. That was not created until the month after. In April 2004, Clark County Pool and Lawn Service was incorporated. We believe that Clark County Pool and Lawn Service should also be liable on the agreement to Mr. Grills, because based on the unique circumstances of this case, all the employees from Backyard Pool Service served as the employees for Clark County Pool and Lawn Service. It's my understanding Ms. Sanchez, she did interview all the employees again and did decide to rehire all of them. She serviced the customers of the former business Backyard Pool Service. She also had the equipment from Backyard Pool Service, which she purchased from the IRS when she obtained a release from the IRS after making a payment of $3,011. There's a doctrine of reverse piercing, which would allow the assets of the business to be liable for Ms. Sanchez's debts. That's just based on the circumstances of this case and the structure of the business. Ms. Sanchez owns a business along with her husband, David Sanchez. Jeanette Sanchez is an officer of the business. And so they're, for purposes of this action, they should be considered one and the same. If the court does not find that, for some reason, that the arrangement between the parties does not rise to a level of a contract, I ask that the case be remanded so that we can at least pursue the unjust enrichment claim against the defendants. There was a benefit conferred on both defendants by Mr. Grills when he allowed, well, when he informed Jeanette Sanchez of the lien and made arrangements for her to, or cooperated with her taking control of a business. Obviously, all the assets of his former business work are used and were used used by a Clark County Pool and Lawn Service, and she has accepted and retained those benefits throughout. There was some talk about the back taxes owed by the business, and that's kind of how the process started. And it's not clearly reflected in my brief, but the record shows, and it was down in the lower court as well, the taxes were incurred and the IRS lien was incurred not by Mr. Grills himself. It was by the former owner of the business, which was his then-ex-wife, Sandy Grills. She apparently got the business as part of a divorce settlement. She was not paying taxes as properly, and a lien got put against the business by the IRS. Mr. Grills then stepped back in and took back control of the business, and as he was taking back control, that's when the agreement was made with Ms. Sanchez. I believe that covers most of the arguments or the position of Mr. Grills at this time. He had evidence. Unfortunately, there was no written agreement, and there's no way around that. They're relying on his interrogatory answers and the declarations of people who participated in the initial conversation and in subsequent conversations with Ms. Sanchez.
The district court's order seems to place some emphasis on the absence of a written agreement in deciding this question. Did the parties below argue statute of frauds?
Barely, really briefly, Your Honor. I brought it up in the. I brought it up that this was an agreement outside of the statute of frauds because it could have been performed in 1 year. The agreement was that Mr. Grills would receive payments of $2,500 a month for the remainder of his life. That's an agreement that could be performed within 1 year. If he would have passed away within a couple months after the agreement being formed, then. You know, obviously the contract wouldn't have gone forward. So it is a contract that could have been performed within 1 year, and I believe that takes us outside of the statute of frauds.
But my question is, was the absence of a written agreement the basis on which the summary judgment was sought?
I believe there was two bases. One, there was no written agreement, and there was no agreement at all.
But again, I ask the question, did the parties argue below the interpretation of the statute of frauds?
No, other than what I've described to you right now about the possibility of performance of completing performance in 1 year. That was the only argument made, and it wasn't discussed.
The statute of frauds doesn't seem to be in the judge's order, so... Only the absence of a written agreement.
Right. She does, in the conclusions of law sections, and I believe, and also in the judgment section, it does mention, in the conclusion of law section on page 36 of the joint appendix, which is page 3 of the order, states, this honorable court finds that there was no written agreement between plaintiff and defendants, as plaintiff alleged, and that there are undisputed material facts prove that there was no agreement at all between plaintiffs and defendants. And then down below in the judgment portion, it mentions, it is therefore ordered and judged and decreed that this court finds that there is no written agreement between the parties and that undisputed facts prove that there is no agreement between the parties. So the order seems to cover both the written agreement portion and the oral agreement portion.
Well, she's simply saying there's no written agreement, but the judge doesn't seem to address the question of did there need to be. That's a separate issue.
Right.
Okay. And the parties didn't argue that below.
Not extensively, just what we have the transcripts attached to the joint appendix, and there's a short discussion about the statute of frauds, and that was it.
Okay.
Can I ask you one question? In the transcript of the hearing, there's an indication, there was a statement by the court, and this is what's indicated in the transcript, that, and this is what she said, that there's no written agreement, and the undisputed facts that have been presented established that there was no agreement.
Right.
Can you address that it was undisputed? That, I mean, did you concede at any point during that argument that?
I would have to look at the transcript, but I would concede that there was no written agreement. There's no explicit right. written agreement signed by both parties. But I would believe there was an agreement based on
And so I guess that's where it's confusing because she seems to be on this written agreement aspect and kind of at the same time saying there's no agreement, but she's unclear as to whether that's pertaining to the written agreement or any agreement at all. And this statement here, I guess it's undisputed there was no written agreement, correct?
There's no explicit agreement.
So that's where it gets a little confusing the way she's couching this in terms of an agreement. So
did she just ignore the affidavits filed by the Grills children?
I brought them up. They were attached to the motion. So
they plainly show that there was at least an issue as to whether this happened. They claim it did, that he transferred his business in exchange for $2,500 a month for the rest of his life.
Right, and those are mentioned. And those are brought up to the court during the hearing as well. So but she still found that there is no genuine issue of material fact. So I guess it should not consider them to be relevant.
Okay. Any further questions of Mr. Brandt?
Thank you. I'll save the remainder of my time for my rebuttal.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Justices. Chris Grobel on behalf of Jeanette Sanchez and Clark County Pools. I also have Jeanette Sanchez, my client.
Let me ask you the question that I'd asked opposing counsel about the Grills affidavits. They seem to indicate at least there's an issue here.
It all comes down to the way I fashioned what she was saying, and we'll get to the statute of frauds issue that she brought up as well later. But what I thought she was saying as far as the affidavits, I think in the transcript she actually did look at the affidavits, and she just didn't give them any, to her, didn't create a genuine issue of fact. And also, if we looked at Bond versus Stardust, it's 82 Nevada 47, it does say, and this is a 1960s case, it's an old case, but it has been overturned, conclusory statements and affidavits do not create an issue of material fact. So that's what we brought up in our brief. As far as that issue is concerned. And from our standpoint, the statute of frauds issue and getting to that, we think that, you know, in NRS 111-220, Travis touched on it, that, you know, these types of contracts, and I've been in front of two of you justices before, but not you, Justice Hardesty, but I don't consider myself in practicing 19 years as a civil litigator. I'm a contract attorney, a business attorney, and this is a business client of mine. Not at the time, otherwise I would have written an agreement for her, but I draft contracts for a living, and the first thing that I see is a statute of frauds problem. And this 1 year outside the statute of frauds issue he brought up, if you look at the transcripts, and we can read it out loud, she did bring that up in her question to him, and he said, well, the same thing he said today, he could have died within that 1 year period, and therefore it could have been performed with 1 year. We would say that that's more of a termination of an agreement versus a performance. And in retrospect, it went on for 7 years. So therefore, it would be firmly within the statute of frauds. And because she had brought that up, and she didn't buy it, she and frankly says, we can go back to the transcript, I don't buy their argument, what's your next argument? Or nice try, counsel, what's your next argument? So we didn't in rebuttal, because we didn't have a rebuttal to go ahead and go through that, you know, to flush it out. But we do think it's a statutes of fraud issue, and it should have been excluded. So we can have three affidavits on one side, and we had six attached to ours. That said exactly the opposite. But we could have 600, and they could have 300, they can have 3,000. It doesn't matter because from our standpoint, it needed to be in writing. It's a statute of frauds issue. This type of contract has to be in writing.
How many $2,500 monthly payments were made?
76 of them. 76, and they're all paid as an employee because he worked as a licensed qualifier for the State Contractors Board for this company. He was an advisor. He got paid as an employee. Employment taxes were taken out as an employee, and he was also given a W-2 every year that he received that income.
What did he do to get fired?
Unfortunately, the circumstances, and you have to remember, well, not remember, I'm just sharing with you, at the time that my client bought these assets from the IRS, this was a fledgling business. They owed money to the IRS. They owed back payroll taxes. And maybe not his client, Mr. Grills, directly, Sandy Grills, his ex-wife, but they had run this business into the ground. They owed employees money. The reason why that $10,000 was left in the account was because they could have used that to pay the IRS lien off, even though it would have been probably more for them. But they owed so much other bills, they just couldn't keep this business going, no matter if the $10,000 or $100,000. This business was a tough business that needed to be brought back up from the ground up. You had to dig it out and then bring it up and build it back up. So it wasn't like he just turned this over, but at the same time, when my client bought these assets from the IRS, she re-interviewed employees. She got her own workers' compensation insurance. Everything normal, but started the other defendant, which is Clark County Pool and Lawn Service. Started a corporation. In fact, the assets were actually bought with Clark County Pool and Lawn Service's money, not by Jeanette Sanchez personally, which I'll get to in a little bit.
But the question is, if there were $2,500 monthly payments, and I know you argue that they are wages paid, but the issue in front of us is whether there was a genuine issue of material fact created in this dispute. And the contention is that these payments were paid pursuant to an agreement embodied in answers to interrogatories and in affidavits. The judge rejected this, and if her decision is based on statute of frauds, if the payments are viewed as payments for the purchase of the business, doesn't that fall within an exception to the statute of frauds as partial performance?
But I don't think the underlying Judge Hardcastle wasn't convinced by the argument, nor are we. I think that there was no business to buy. He was losing his business. The IRS had seized the assets. They could sell to a competitor, and if they did sell to a competitor, that would have all the accounts and all the business and all the employees and all the routes to run, then Mr. Gross wouldn't receive $1 for that. Instead,
well,
Jeanette did that, and he got a salary for being a consultant for the company, being the licensed qualifier. And to answer your question, Justice Cherry, the reason why those payments ceased is because the economy was tough, you know, at that point in time. They found a licensed qualifier of their own, some they didn't go outside for, some that was being paid as a pool contractor anyway. His name's Frank Rice, had worked there for 27 years. So he became and went to, took the test and became the licensed qualifier that afforded them to stay in business and pay the payroll taxes and to keep in business at that time. And that was explained to Mr. Grills in a letter from Clark County Pools a couple months in advance of giving notice of why they're doing that.
Counsel, could you clarify something with respect to the acquisition of the business through the IRS lien? My understanding is that the lien was paid off, but that there was no foreclosure proceeding or levy that would have allowed for the transfer of title. The IRS had never taken over this business through those processes. Is that right?
I'm not sure what the IRS did or what they didn't do, but we do have, and it's attached to our joint appendix, we do have a copy of the check and also the bill of sale from the assets that she was purchasing from the IRS. So while I wasn't there during the time, my understanding is the IRS did go through that, did have title to assets and transfer the title to my client. She bought the equipment at a sale from the IRS, correct?
Was there any...
That would be on page 54, I'm sorry about.
Right. Was there any evidence, affidavits or otherwise, that refutes the efficacy of the bill of sale from the IRS?
That was not brief. I guess from my perspective, I can't say anything for Travis, but from everyone's perspective, it hasn't been brought up until you just brought it up right now. It was presumed that the reason why that payment was being made is that Clark County Pools and Lawn bought that equipment and went into and assumed the lease and went ahead and started operating, you know, interviewed the employees, got their own insurance, got their licenses and started conducting business and had Mr. Gross as a licensed qualifier and paid him to do that service and to be a consultant.
Well, the actual language, and I want to make sure we're talking about the same document, I'm looking at, I think it's record 054, says release of assets from federal tax lien. not bill of sale.
But I think if you go and look at the language.
Could we just clarify the document we're talking about?
Yeah, that's correct. We're looking at the same document, page 54.
The language of the document on 54 of the record says that for the sum of $3,011 paid to the Internal Revenue Service, the assets and inventory of Backyard Pool Services, Inc. are released from the federal tax lien. And your argument is that the next language, are purchased free and clear, provides a basis for acquisition of the assets from the IRS.
That's, it's never been questioned until you question right now, with all due respect. Yeah. And that's the way I read it as a contract. Listen, it could have been drafted better, but that second, that last portion of the sentence, absolutely, to me, conveys they're purchased free and clear. That's what you have in a bill of sale. These assets are being purchased free and clear of any liens and encumbrances. That's what you'd normally have in that type of language. So, mm-hmm. to me, even though it's not titled bill of sale, the IRS is the one that drafted this. The IRS is the one that signed this. And my client thought when she was purchasing these assets that she was purchasing it, not just satisfying a release of lien on the assets.
Wasn't the essence of this agreement as simple as the fact that she turned over, that he turned over the business to her, and that she was going to pay him $2,500 a month for the rest of his life?
No.
That simple?
It's not that simple, unfortunately, no.
And that's what's indicated in the affidavits that were submitted, though, correct?
Not correct, because with all due respect, the one that was submitted by William Grills, that one does say that he was a participant in the original meeting at Timber's Bar and Grill.
Mm-hmm.
And it does say that he did hear during that conversation that Backyard Pools was being assumed by my client. But it doesn't say, if you look specifically in there, and counsel drafted that even though they signed it, it doesn't say $2,500. It doesn't have the monetary amount, which is the most important amount we're talking about. We're here because of money. So why doesn't it have the $2,500 in there? It just says, yes, there was an agreement to take over the business. And the other two
affidavits. Which, you're talking about the declaration of William Grills?
William Grills.
The one I'm looking at definitely says it was.
Or maybe it's Anthony Grills. Hold on, maybe I missed.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, if you look at Anthony Grills, which was the only one of those three affidavits that was done at the time of the original meeting that we're all talking about here in 2004.
One more question I had for you. Your position is that he was strictly an employee.
Correct.
Getting $2,500 a month, he was at will.
Correct? That's correct, yeah.
So what would be the basis for your client reimbursing him the $10,000 that was in the bank account when she took over the business?
I think that in answer to your question, I asked my client the same thing. Why would he do something like that? Why wouldn't he take the $10,000 and just pay it off himself? And the answer, what she shared with me, the answer was is that there were old payroll that was owed. There was other monies that were owed. He was going to be creating a job for himself, being the licensed qualifier, and he was helping her with some front seed money that she would pay back when the company could afford to. But it wasn't that he was, it was basically a loan. He said, I have this money to help us get going, and he was creating a job because he knew if this business went to any of his competitors, he would have nothing on a go-forward basis. But instead, he got 76 checks at $2,500, a lot of money.
Okay. Thank you.
So is my time up for now, or just beat?
No, you have four additional minutes if you have any additional arguments.
Yes, well, just with regard, because we're talking about the statute of frauds, but with regard to the undisputed facts, I think we have to bifurcate both Jeanette Sanchez as a defendant and also Clark County Pools. Although the first conversation was had with Jeanette Sanchez, the undisputed facts show that Clark County Pools is really the true defendant here, not Jeanette Sanchez. One undisputed fact that we argued at the trial was that Jeanette did not purchase the assets. The document we just went over on page 54, that is purchased by Clark County Pool and Lawn Service. Jeanette didn't pay any monies to Richard Grills. It's always Clark County Pool and Lawn Service. Clark County Pool and Lawn Service is the one that he served as the licensed qualifier for. Clark County Pool and Lawn Service is the one that issued the W-2s, and on. It was never Jeanette Sanchez that actually paid Mr. Grills any amount of money. So we think at a minimum, Jeanette Sanchez as an individual doesn't have any liability. The business is run by Clark County Pools. Jeanette may be the president of that, but that doesn't. There hasn't been any argument as far as Mr. Brandt or anything at the lower court that tries to pierce the corporate veil at her individually. In fact, he was referring to a reverse corporate veil to get Clark County Pools in. But we feel, and I hate to do an alternative argument because we think our statute of frauds is strong enough that there shouldn't have been any written agreement, but if there's an alternative argument at this point in time, we think the undisputed facts show at the trial court that Jeanette Sanchez as an individual should be released from this case at this point in time. Now, with regard to Clark County Pools, we talked about it before. We feel this was a purchase of the assets. There wasn't any business for Mr. Grills to sell. It was gone. The IRS was going to sell to somebody, and even the lower trial court, Judge Hardcastle, said it was irrelevant how she found out about it. She did find out about it from Mr. Grills, but he got something out of that. He got to be a licensed qualifier and got money for 76 weeks, a long period of time, and got his money paid back as far as that loan is concerned. But with regard to the undisputed facts, same thing. Clark County Pool was the one that bought the assets. They're the one that paid his employee. He served as their licensed qualifier, repaid the $10,000 loan, and there's basically it's undisputed that Clark County Pools did go ahead and purchase those assets, paid him as an employee, and you wouldn't normally buy a business and pay someone as an employee. You'd buy the business, pay them either a gross sum or a payment sum over a term of months, and maybe pay them a salary for a certain period of time to stay on, but you most certainly wouldn't just pay them as an employee, in my opinion. So, and then as far as the unjust enrichment claim, I know I only have about 2 minutes. We believe that if there is found, there's no contract. We don't feel that any unjust enrichment claim should survive as well, because it's our position that there was no benefit conferred upon our client. Our client paid for the assets. Any benefit that was conferred was paid for in the form of salary, which was a licensed qualifier consultant. Our client paid them for that consultancy fee. There's no unjust enrichment claim here because there's no benefit that was conferred upon him that hasn't been already paid. And with regard to the declaratory relief, we feel that that's part and parcel with the breach of contract action. So that is a relief claim, not a separate cause of action, so we don't think that should survive either if the first two don't.
Okay. Anything else?
There's no more questions.
Thank you. Grant?
I wanted to respond to his argument regarding the Bond versus Stardust case, where that's a case in which I believe it's the plaintiff in that matter tried to defeat a motion for summary judgment with an affidavit, which was found to be self-serving and wasn't otherwise supported by the evidence and by the special master involved in that case. This case is different. We have the declarations of another person at the initial meeting that Anthony Grills. Mr. Grills did testify that there was an agreement between the parties, whereas his father, Richard Grills, would receive payment. He did not recall what the amount was, and that's not stated in the declaration, the monthly amount was, but he did state in the declaration that Richard Grills would receive payment. We also have the declarations of Kenneth Wellington and William Grills, which they talk about subsequent conversations with Jeanette Sanchez. So I believe that takes it outside of the Bond versus Stardust case. Lastly, just to reiterate regarding the checks, the first couple series of checks to Mr. Grills were for the full $2,500 before any taxes were taken out, and those are found in the appendix at page 58 to page 62. And at some point in time, taxes were then taken out. And that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. This matter will stay.